Summertime is dairy time. We're just coming out of National Dairy Month, just starting National Ice Cream Month. Here in Ohio, dairy is big. Billions of dollars of economic activity that is driven by dairy farmers, milk processors, and dairy food manufacturers. Today we're going to talk all things dairy, including learning what it takes to run a modern farm. And we'll have a lot of information for those of you who enjoy milk, cheese, ice cream, and other products from the dairy industry. We're talking dairy on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Milk, it does a body good. Got milk? Undeniably dairy? If you consume any kind of commercial media, these three marketing slogans are familiar ones. Dairy farmers, like any business, are interested in getting you to be interested in their product. And today we're going to learn a lot about the industry from farm to table. Our guests are Scott Higgins. He is the exec for the American Dairy Association Mideast and Ohio Dairy Farmers Association. Chuck Mullendick is a dairy farmer and a board member for those two groups as well. Scott, Chuck, welcome to Town Hall, Ohio. Glad to have you guys in.
Thank you. Good to be here, Joe.
So let's talk a little bit, and maybe, Scott, you can get us started about the dairy industry. We've got a lot of dairy farmers. We have a lot of dairy cows. We have the processing and manufacturing. Just kind of paint the picture of dairy in Ohio.
Well, it's really quite an honor to be able to address this, because dairy farming is probably one of the least visible marketings out there. Consumers just don't think about it when they pour their glass of milk or grab that nice ice cream and make themselves a sundae. And when they grab a chunk of cheese, you just don't really think about everything that goes on behind the scenes. And over the years, there have been a number of farmers that we've reduced the number of farms in the state of Ohio. But today, we still have over 2,400 dairy farmers that operate in the state of Ohio. And when you stop and think about the number of families that live and rely on that dairy farm economy, it's over 14,000 families and friends and business associates that work for dairymen like Chuck. And so it is a big business and a very big food industry. But dairy in Ohio is alive and well, strong. We've got a lot of dairy processing and manufacturing plants in the state of Ohio as well.
So, Chuck, tell us about your family's dairy operation.
We're from Fairfield County. I am in partnership with my dad, Charles, and my son just graduated high school, and he'll be coming back to the dairy farm also. We farm just a little over 800 acres total, and we milk 80 cows.
What breed? Are they black and white?
Mostly black and white Holsteins, and we have a few Jerseys and crosses.
So walk us through a day when things go right. the common picture is the dairy farmer getting up really early in the morning to get out and milk the cows. Is that still true? And then just walk us through a day for a dairy farmer such as yourself.
It's true twice a day, every day that we milk the cows. Either me, my son, or some of our employees that we have working for us. We start milking around 7 a.m. And I changed the times years ago when my kids were growing up and they were involved in sports. So if I wanted to be able to cover milking shifts and go to sporting events when they were younger, plus it was harder and harder to find people who wanted to get up at 4 a.m. to milk at 5.
Sure. So did you say how many cows you have?
Right now we're milking 80.
80 cows. I want to drill down here, because a lot of folks don't have the chance to ever hear from a dairy farmer. What do you do to milk those 80 cows in the morning? What's the process?
We're a grazing operation, so between April and late October, you go out to get the cows off the grazing paddocks. You walk them in, you put them in the barn. They will get feed in the barn and also out in the grazing paddocks. So they'll come in and eat a little bit while we're setting up the milking parlor, and then we start milking them. It takes about 2 hours total to get everything done, and then after that we feed the babies and the younger heifers. Then after that we go about doing the other things we're doing the rest of the year. In February and March, we're usually spreading manure. And in April, May, we're working ground, planting crops. And also the first week of May, we start harvesting hay. And we do that 4 to 5 times a year.
So, Scott, how typical is that family dairy that Chuck just described in Ohio?
Well, the majority of our farms are about 80 to 100 cows throughout the state of Ohio. We've got some larger farms, but the average farm size is that. And out of the 2,400 dairy farms, Joe's one of those that really represents everybody. He has a sincere interest in his family. He's very community-oriented. Works hard with the cows. He serves on boards of directors, helps set policy for dairy organizations. So Joe and his family are really a great audience, a great group to work through.
So, Chuck, why do you do these other things? You've got your hands full with the farm. You mentioned you built your farming around being able to go to the kids' ball games and such.
Mm-hmm.
Scott needs you to come to a board meeting, and the County Dairy Association probably needs you to work at the county fair. Why do you do those kind of things on top of trying to run a family business?
Well, back when my grandfather started in the 1930s, you would go talk to the processor yourself to get your milk sold. And some days he would pick you up. Some days he would pick your neighbor up. And some days if they picked you up every day, they wouldn't take all of your milk. So he and back then we were from West Virginia, just across the border outside Parkersburg, West Virginia. So from that point on, him and the other farmers in the area started to meet in the Ohio Valley, and that's how farmer co-ops for dairy started. And my grandfather told me as I was growing up, if when I'm dead and you're still milking cows, you do not leave the co-op. So if you're in a co-op, the members represent us on these boards and delegates, and we are the ones that go in, and we meet several times a year to make sure things are, you know, functioning the way we want them. It's our organization, in our co-op anyhow. And then the Dairy Farmers of America is a co-op I belong to. And so we elect representation from each district. And then from Ohio, we nominate and elect people to serve on the Ohio Dairy Producers Association and American Dairy Association Mideast.
So bringing fellow farmers together and then governing yourselves to do better in the marketplace. And then we'll talk about this too, but now not only do you have to be a sharp marketer and a good dairyman, but you need to know how things run down at the State House and the White House too. And that's,
yes,
that's a role that another dairy association plays. Scott, not to get too caught up on size issues here, but you said most of the dairies like Chuck's are 80 to 100 head, but we've got some that are thousands of cows in Ohio, too. Do we see a trend moving that way? Is it going to go to where they're going to be much larger, or are we going to keep that mixture of small, medium, and large?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question, Joe. I think a lot of people forget where we came from. You know, a little story here. My grandfather raised 6 kids by milking 18 cows on 65 acres. His brothers and all the brothers of all the dairy farmers in the community all left their farm, went and started their own dairy operation, and raised small, you know, raised their families on small farms. Over the years, the ability to raise a family on those few cows would be impossible in today's age. So the evolution the dairy industry has gone through has been to increase the size of the herds, increase the magnitude of the production facilities to feed all those cows, and then the number of families it takes to work together to be the most efficient you can give so that you can give consumers what they want, when they want, and the best quality milk. It's been that evolution that farmers have gone through. So moving from an 18-cow dairy to my dad milking 65 while I was in high school to 90 when I was in college, and then for us to go back and do more, I was going to have 150 to 200 cows to be able to make that dairy operation work without hired help. And so when you stop and think about the economies of scale have to be followed in order to make it work. Margins are thin as it is. Dairy farmers work really hard with very thin margins. And the thing to take away from all this is farm sizes have increased in order to meet consumer demand and the expectations of our retail community and our consuming public. So now we've got farms that are as much as 5,000 cows. But keep this in mind, Joe, they're still family farms. They're owned by families that have worked together, brought all their assets and resources together, and decided to grow to that size to be able to meet that need. And a lot of our retailers out there in our processing community are looking for tanker-size daily shipments. So there's a place for all dairy farmers, though, Joe. It takes all sizes to make it work. And what's important is that regardless of size, these dairymen work hard to make sure their cows are well cared for, the environment that they're working in is protected, they're being good stewards of the land, and they're doing it more efficient and more effective than ever in history.
Scott Higgins is the president and CEO of the American Dairy Association Mideast and CEO for Ohio Dairy Producers Association. Chuck Mullendix sits on the board for both of those and is a dairy farmer here in central Ohio. Touch on that, the one point that Scott made about margins being tight in dairy. I've been in this business 40 years. I understand dairy markets and dairy policy least, never can get my arms around it. But I do know your industry is one that's susceptible to some very significant price swings.
Yes. What Scott spoke about, the price that we get paid, back when I was a senior in high school, we were getting anywhere from $12 to $14 a hundredweight. That's how you get paid, and also on components. Today, it's scarcely more than that. Right now, it's $16, $17 a hundredweight. We had a high a couple years ago where it went up to $22, $23 a hundredweight, but that was the same time when corn prices went high, soybeans went high. And that's why you have to be bigger, because of the small margins. It's almost like the swine and the poultry industry, you know, went to a bigger model.
So Scott makes the point that a family dairy is a family dairy, whether it's eight cows or 80 cows or 800. Mm-hmm. Do you find that in talking to dairymen that are smaller operations or larger operations than yours?
The bigger dairies are owned by families, and they help employ more families. We cannot, you know, afford to have, you know, full-time help. We have mostly high school and college age kids that help us. And that's why right now we are in the plans to transition into organic. The milk price is a lot, but the economics work out a lot better when you're organic.
Well, that's going to be another part of our conversation we want to follow up on. Just real quick, I only got about 30 seconds before we have to go to break, but you said, I think your son's getting ready to graduate from college. So is that too influencing what you're going to do in the future plans for the dairy if you're bringing another generation on?
Yes, and he's just graduated high school. He doesn't want to go to college. He's going to take some more intense courses towards business management and dairy industry. But, yeah, that's why we're switching.
Well, we're going to talk more about what it means to be a dairy person in Ohio and to be a dairy consumer as well, because we've got a lot of good information about why milk and cheese and butter and ice cream belongs on your family's plate. We'll be back to talk more with Scott Higgins and Chuck Mullendix when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
I got to milk 'em in the morning, feed 'em, milk 'em in the evening blues. This old barnyard heifer's got me blue down to my shoes. I get up every morning before anything stirs. I get smacked with a tail full of cuckold birds. I got to milk 'em in the morning, feed 'em.
We're talking all things dairy on Town Hall, Ohio, with Chuck Mullendix, who's a family dairy farmer and board member for the American Dairy Association Mideast and the Ohio Dairy Producers Association. Scott Higgins is the exec for those two organizations. Scott, I've mentioned both groups. Tell us about ADA Mideast and Dairy Producers Association.
Absolutely. Well, the American Dairy Association is owned by dairy farmers. Since the early 1900s, dairy farmers have had an interest in telling their story, informing consumers about the importance of dairy as a nutrient component of a healthy and balanced diet. So over the years, we've evolved from what was a program that used publicity. But as we know, media and the dynamics of reaching consumers changes literally yearly now, if not even sooner. And so over the years, we've evolved from a marketing promotion organization to a social media organization to a storytelling organization, all to help equip consumers with facts and information and to serve as the voice for dairy farmers directly to consumers. So over the years, the dairy farmers have contributed to this program, and in 1984, it became a nationwide mandatory program whereby dairy farmers pooled all their resources. And our challenge in those years was to sell milk very aggressively because we had a surplus of milk. And so we've done that very effectively. In fact, consumer sales have gone from 122 billion pounds of milk back in 1984 to over 212 billion pounds of milk this year.
So ADA is the marketing arm. You also have another organization in Ohio, the Ohio Dairy Producers Association. If I'm not mistaken, that's where you represent dairy interests at the State House.
That's correct. And dairy farmers also contribute into a separate fund. It's a voluntary program, and dairy farmers pay in based on their dairy farm's interests. And we represent them on issues that affect their dairy farm directly. We collaborate with, work in partnership with Ohio Farm Bureau and other marketing and trade organizations. But when it's a specific dairy policy or concern, that's where the Dairy Association steps up and engages. So we do work with the state level. We also work on federal dairy policy as well.
So, Chuck, from a farmer's perspective, how important is it? Let's set aside the marketing. They've been doing it for decades, as Scott pointed out. But how important is it that if you want to survive on your family dairy and your high school son wants to be there for another generation, how important is it that dairy farmers are knocking on doors at the State House or in Washington?
It's very important, and this organization is just like our dairy co-op almost, where you have people that are in constant contact, and then when one of us is needed to go down and do testimony, one of us do.
So I want to switch over to a little bit from the consumer perspective about the dairy industry. And for those of us in farm circles, it was semi-humorous, but also kind of sad. A lot of news lately, Scott, about the fact that there's quite a large percentage of people who think chocolate milk comes from brown cows. You and I are both smiling, Chuck's laughing, but it's something like 7 or 8% of Americans. Chuck, do you have to have brown cows for chocolate milk?
No, you don't. I get those questions when we go to the county fair, and you know, people do not get to interact with the animals like they used to. More and more people are separated 1, 2, and 3 generations from, you know, anything that has to do with farming at all.
So just to set the record straight, it's Chuck's milk, and it's some sugar, and it's some cocoa, and that's where chocolate milk comes from.
Yes.
Scott, another thing that folks, when they go to back in my day, the dairy Meadow Gold would just deliver glass bottles of milk to the house, and it was whole milk. Now there's whole milk, there's half, skim milk, there's 1%, there's 2%. Walk us, just give us an idea of what we're talking about when we look at these different fat percentages in milk.
Okay, sure. Over the years, there's been an interest in trying to follow a diet that was prescribed by most of the health professional community that said that fat was not good for us. And so there was a transition in the dairy industry, moving away from just milk straight from the cow, which we call whole milk, and they started to break it down and reduce the amount of fat. So through stepping it down, you go from 3.25%, which is the base for whole milk, the minimum standard for whole milk, down to 2%, even 1% in skim milk, where they simply just take all the fat out of it and sell it in the jug or in the bottle as it is. Over the years, though, there has been science that's starting to evolve that says that fat wasn't the culprit that many once thought. And as a matter of fact, consumers left the category of dairy because they didn't like the taste. And so while the nutrition community was trying to purport one thing, now the nutrition community is coming back and the science is saying, actually, dairy fat and whole fats and things like that are good for you. And consumers are coming back around. And we're seeing a trend now, Joe. The trend at the dairy case is, I want something that's going to taste good. And if it's not harmful to me, why can't I have what I like when I like it? And so whole fat and whole dairy is coming back, and much to the surprise of, and it's really a pleasure for us as a dairy industry to see that, because all along We didn't believe that.
And real quick, pasteurized and homogenized, what's that mean?
Well, pasteurized simply means you heat it to a certain temperature to be able to get the bacteria killed in it. We want to make sure consumers are safe. Homogenization simply breaks down all the fat globules and spins them together real fast and makes it all soluble and it all sits together so it doesn't separate. When I was a child, we used to be able to take the cream, you used to separate the cream off of the milk. Well, today's consumers don't like it that way. So homogenization simply makes it all stay together.
And another big trend that is in the dairy industry, like a lot of our food industry, the move towards organic. Chuck mentioned that his dairy farm is going that direction. We're going to learn more about going organic from a farmer's perspective when we continue on Town Hall Ohio. Mint chocolate chip, in case either of you are interested. But we're talking dairy, including ice cream, with Scott Higgins and Chuck Molendick. Scott is the exec for the Dairy Association and the Dairy Producers Association. Chuck Molendick's a dairy farmer and board member for both of those. So you mentioned a little bit ago, Chuck, I wanted to follow up. You are transitioning your farm from conventional to an organic dairy operation.
Yes.
You just do that overnight, right?
No, it's a long process. It's costly because while you're in the transition, it takes three years for your land to transition. And then after you get that set, it takes a year for your cows. And that's a one-time thing that you can do. And if you want to expand your herd after that point, you have to buy organic cows.
So when you say transition your land, what are some of the things that you're going to have to do differently and with your cows too?
Well, the land, you do not use any synthetic fertilizers. You do not spray herbicides, pesticides. And it's basically you take care of your land differently than the way we have conventionally for corn, soybeans, and even our alfalfa. Things you are just not permitted to do to be organic.
So is organic milk then better for me than the milk you used to produce?
No. It's the same. It just comes from cows that are fed differently and raised differently than what the conventional cows are.
And there are people who, whether it's science that they're following or just simply beliefs and values, they want it that way, and that's okay.
Yes.
Apparently, there must be a bit better margin in organic milk production.
Yes. In 1983, when I was in high school, reference back to the price we were paid then, and now it's not much more, but organic pricing, it's almost twice as much right now.
So, Scott, like you were talking about all kinds of sizes of dairies across Ohio, I think most dairy families that I've been around, farmers that I've been around, they're pro-choice. If you want to buy milk that was produced conventionally and you want to buy it from a dairy that's 5,000 cows, fine. If you want to buy it from an 80-cow organic dairy, fine. We just need the dairy farmers to be able to operate and fill those market needs.
That's right, Joe. And at the bottom of this is simply this. Consumers want what they want when they want it, and they're willing to pay whatever price there is. Now, there's a spectrum. There's those who are in need, and we call those food insecure. We're working really hard to provide the most efficient, most cost-effective solution to make sure milk is affordable for them. And then you've got folks on the other end of the spectrum who have plenty and are interested in buying and are willing to spend more than the average consumer would be able to do. We have to meet everybody's needs and everybody's expectation. The beauty of a free market is that in this industry, we can produce and we can serve, and we can customize our dairy products to meet all needs. What's important to note is we don't disparage one against the other. We simply meet the expectation and the desire of the consumer and let them participate in the market by buying the product they want. So dairy farmers really have to step back, look at it as a spectrum of marketing opportunities, and fill those needs where consumers ask to be met.
So trying to get the consumer to buy your dairy products, as you pointed out earlier, Scott, that's been the purpose of the American Dairy Association for many, many years. Folks, right now, I'm seeing it on television, and I'm sure it's in other media as well, a new marketing campaign, Undeniably Dairy. Tell us a little bit about its goal.
It's really quite an experience to watch this evolve. Over the years, as we've heard, fewer and fewer families are associated with dairy. It's a great opportunity for us as a dairy industry to rally all those folks who really have a heart for and a love for dairy. And no matter where you are and what you're doing, there's probably some touch point in your life where you really celebrate the value of dairy, whether it's the ice cream you enjoy, mine happens to be, you know, good old-fashioned chocolate, or it's the type of milk you drink, it's the cheese you love, it's even the brand of cheese that you champion and stand behind. It could be your farm values. It could be the celebration of dairy and the use of all natural fertilizers in our community to raise our crops. There's a variety of things that are happening. And then the evolution of and the new marketing around harvesting nutrients out of manure, using it to gain to make energy, to make electric. Folks just need to be able to celebrate. And for us as a dairy industry, we're reconnecting our people and our communities with the dairy and the dairy farmers and the processing community that are a part of it. So Undeniably Dairy gives us a chance to celebrate who we are throughout the June Dairy Month and for future years to come.
So you come in from a hard day, you plop down in front of the television after supper, you maybe prop your feet up, and one of these commercials comes on, whatever television show you're watching. How do you feel about that?
Good. It's harder and harder for us to use our money for television commercials, just to get a broader, voice out there. We use other types of media also.
And that's why you have experts that help you do that.
Yes.
And you're not required to sit there and make those decisions yourself. We will be back in just a couple of moments to talk more with Chuck Mullendick and Scott Higgins about Ohio's dairy industry. We'll return right after this.
Well, I woke up this morning, looked outdoors. I can tell my milk cow, I can tell by the way she lows. If you see my milk cow, please drive her on home. 'Cause I ain't had no milk and butter since that cow been gone.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. We're looking back on June as Dairy Month. We missed it by a couple of days, but what the hey, we're still talking dairy. And helping us tell that story, Scott Higgins of the American Dairy Association and Ohio Dairy Producers Association. Chuck Mullendick is a dairy farmer, sits on the board for those two groups. Besides nutrition, besides taste, besides convenience, probably never far from the top of the consumer's mind checklist of what they want from any food, dairy especially, is food safety. Scott, talk to our listeners a little bit about, we hear about antibiotics, we hear about hormones. What should the consuming public know?
Well, to start with, dairy farmers and our dairy processing community work hard to make sure that food safety is number one. You stop and think about the United States is known for the safety and wholesomeness of our dairy industry. So much so that, let me ask you this, when you reach in the refrigerator and grab a glass of milk and pour it, you don't think twice. You just don't, because you know that the reputation of the dairy community stands behind it. There are those out there that want to drive fear and want to transform and maybe change consumer habits by scaring them away from dairy. We're here to tell you that our dairy processor and our dairy farmers work hard to make sure that there are no antibiotics in milk. Keep in mind, though, we also have to take care of our animals. So the judicious use of antibiotics to bring a cow from being sick back to good health, back into the herd, is a process that farmers take very seriously, working closely with their veterinarian. But we have a system to be able to test and make sure those antibiotics are out of their system and aren't going to show up in any milk that is used for consumers. So we work really hard, and we've got not only dairy farmers and the practices they use, but we also have a Department of Agriculture here and the Dairy Division who monitors all 2,400 farms, all 148 dairy plants that are manufacturing the milk into consumable items to assure that there are no antibiotics that gets in that container. And I'll just put it back on Chuck this way. Chuck, if there happens to be a cow that has antibiotics in her milk and she gets in the bulk tank, what happens to you?
You have to dump the entire tank of milk, and it's also tested each semi or straight truck before it's unloaded at the milk plant or cheese plant. It's tested and cleared before they put that into the system.
And that comes at quite an expense to you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I've been on enough dairy farms and watched the process. You know, sometimes you might think, the regulations are there, but a wink and a nod, and it didn't work that way. I mean, you've got to pay really close attention, T's crossed, I's dotted at all times.
Yeah, we accidentally milked a cow in one time, and it cost us the entire truck. We had to pay for the entire truck, and it does, accidents do happen, but they're stopped before they ever get into the food chain at the milk plant.
Scott, there's some, I guess controversy is the word, as to whether or not people should be consuming raw milk. From the dairy industry perspective, share some thoughts there.
Well, simply put, it's a matter of safety. We don't want anybody to get sick. We know that Louis Pasteur came up with the idea because at that time there were children that were getting sick and dying from the consumption of raw milk. By simply taking one step to pasteurize it, to make sure that all those potential bacteria and campylobacter, anything that could just find its way into that milk is taken out, gives us the assurance that we can grab that gallon of milk and take a drink of it and not worry. Now, keep in mind there are consumer groups out there that feel that they'd like to be able to have access to that. Well, then they're putting the safety in their own hands. But unfortunately, one occurrence where one child becomes sick, it becomes a black eye for the entire dairy industry. So our dairy farmers have taken the policy that let's take the safe route. Let's make sure that all milk is safe. Let's take all the precautions necessary. And so pasteurization is a very vital part of our industry's ability to maintain consumer confidence and ultimate food safety.
So aside from the food that the consumer is going to bring into their home, we have for the last 15, 20 years, Chuck, begun to see consumer demands go beyond the food and get towards the production practices. One in particular, concern over how you as a farmer take care of those animals. Tell us a little bit about your approach to animal care on the farm.
Basically, if you're not caring for your cows and you're mistreating them, they're not going to produce for you. So the steps we take as far as handling the cows, we go over that with our employees, and they're supposed to be handled in a certain manner. If you're not calm with them, they're not going to produce. And we also take steps for when they're sick, having them treated. And if you're an organic producer, your cows are not going to get antibiotics like a conventional herd would. So if they are treated, they're taken out of the herd for a year, and then they can be put back in.
We'll be back to wrap up our discussion of Ohio's dairy industry with Scott Higgins and Chuck Molendick right after this.
Taste the dairy cheeses and feel the dairy breezes, and before you go home, smell our dairy air.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio, and some groans in the studio from Scott Higgins and Chuck Molendick, who are our dairy specialists today on Town Hall, Ohio. Chuck, you were telling us a little bit ago about the animal care, that it's essential, that it's the right thing to do, and economically it makes sense. Another big issue in the last number of years in Ohio is the environmental impact of livestock production, in particular on our water. As you've seen the Lake Erie algal bloom stories pop up and Buckeye Lake and everything else, what are your thoughts on that in terms of your responsibility as a farmer?
Basically, we have our soil tested every year, and so we're making sure that we don't over put manure too much, and to keep from having runoff, you spread it certain times of the year or when you have cover crops. And now that we're switching to organic, basically it's going to go back on our hay production ground. So it'll be a lot easier for us to spread. We don't have to worry about the runoff.
So whatever change you have to make in your operation, You know, I sometimes get the opinion that there are folks that think we can just flip a switch out on the farm and make problems go away. Not necessarily. I mean, you may have new equipment, you may have new knowledge to obtain. It takes a while to transition, right?
Yeah, it's the manure handling on any farm, dairy, swine, it's expensive. Tankers cost anywhere from $30,000 to $60,000, and you just don't have money to throw down at the drop of a hat for that.
And Scott, I think you'll agree with me. Environmental issues have always been on farmers' plates, but they've been elevated in the last number of years. And Chuck's not alone. He's not the only farmer in Ohio that said, you know, I'm going to have to change the way I do things.
That's right. And, you know, dairy farmers have been accustomed to evolving and accepting new tools and new systems to be able to protect the environment. In fact, they get up every day thinking about that. Now, let's transition back to the way Grandpa did it when he had 18 cows and 65 acres. At that time, those cows and that manure were spread on that 65 acres. As farms have consolidated and families have gone together, now it's more concentrated. What's happening is farmers have had to store that manure and then apply it to the land at seasons when it's appropriate so that it doesn't run off. And so farmers take great care in making sure that they follow the standards that are in place, but more importantly, good judgment, knowing when and where, how to keep the manure and the nutrients, natural organic nutrients that come from that, to stay on the land where they're going to be able to grow, replenish, and become good stewards. You know, it's simply put, I just want to add one thing here. Over the years, we went from more cows in the state of Ohio to fewer. We're producing four times more milk production than we did in the 40s. We do it with 90% less cropland because consumers have alternative uses for land. We do it with 76% less manure, 65% less water usage, and we're actually decreasing our carbon footprint by 63%.
We'll touch on one other issue, Scott, before we start to wrap things up. It's high on the national discussion, immigration law and labor on the farm. More and more, we don't have kids that are getting out of high school or coming back to the farm that want a dairy. The dairy industry is very dependent upon having a solid labor workforce.
That's right. And over the years, dairy farmers have become reliant upon migrant labor that comes in and those who really are, they really are interested in working in dairy. If we can't find a local source, then they have to find these. So every day they work through the process of making sure that they sort out, make sure that they are legal, and they follow the documentation and make that happen. So dairy farmers are reliant upon it, and they do good work.
Whether they're immigrants or not, how hard is it to find good labor to come out to the farm and bust their tails?
It's hard, but my son, you know, just graduating from high school, he knows a lot of kids, and we try and pay a little bit more than what the restaurants do, and that's gotten us pretty good help.
So, Scott, real quick, where can folks go if they want to learn all about the dairy industry in Ohio?
Got a couple of great locations. Go to drink-milk.com. Take a look at everything that dairy farmers mean and talk about and are very it's very informational. Gives you everything you're looking for. Also, you can go to dairygood.org. So drink-milk.com or dairygood.org and get all the facts you want about dairy.
Scott Higgins, President and CEO of the American Dairy Association Mideast and CEO for the Ohio Dairy Producers Association and one of his board members for those two groups, dairy farmer Chuck Mullendick. Thanks, guys, for joining us on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall, Ohio.